25 minutes past seven on Thursday night's Arena. In a huge coup for TG Cahir, it has won the rights of the fourth season of Fargo, the TV series based on the Coen brothers' 1996 film of the same name. Arlene Hunt and John Maguire, both Fargo fans, have been watching Series 4, but before we get their views on that, let's take a trip down memory lane, or should I say nightmare lane, because when it comes to Fargo, be it the film or the series, terrible things happen to people living in cold, remote places because they decide to enter pacts with Satan himself. In the original film, it was the desperate car salesman, Jerry Lundegaard, played by William H. Macy, who did the deal with the devil. He was in a desperate situation, does a deal with two hitmen from Fargo, a town in North Dakota, to kidnap his wife for a ransom, hoping that his father-in-law will pay up. But as we hear in this clip, things go wrong. One of the hitmen, Carl, played by Steve Buscemi, calls Jerry with, be warned, a pretty foul-mouthed update on the crime.
Jerry Lundegaard.
All right, Jerry, you got the phone to yourself?
Well, yeah.
You know who this is?
Well, yeah, I got an idea. How's that Sierra working out for you?
Circumstances have changed, Jerry.
Well, what do you mean?
Things have changed. Circumstances, Jerry, beyond the acts of God, force majeure.
What the? How's Jean?
Who's Jean?
My wife.
Oh.
What the?
She's all right, but there's three people up in Brainerd who aren't so okay, I tell you that.
What the heck are you talking about? Let's just finish this deal up here.
Blood has been shed, Jerry.
What the heck do you mean?
Three people in Brainerd.
Oh, jeez.
That's right, and we need more money.
What the heck are you talking about? What do you fellas got yourself mixed up in?
We need more
money. This was supposed to be a no rough stuff type deal.
Don't ever interrupt me, Jerry. Just shut the fuck up.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't...
I'm not going to debate you, Jerry. I'm not going to debate. We now want the entire 80,000.
Oh, for Christ's sake, here.
Blood has been shed. We've incurred risks, Jerry. I'm coming into town tomorrow. You have the money ready.
Now, we had a deal here. A deal's a deal.
Is it, Jerry? You ask those three poor souls up in Brainerd if a deal's a deal. Go ahead, ask them.
The heck do you mean?
The heck you mean? I'll see you tomorrow.
The TV series Fargo then began in 2014. It was the brainchild of writer and director Noah Hawley. And in the first season, the innocent man turned bad was Lester Nygaard, played by Martin Freeman, who accidentally meets hitman Lorne Malvo, played by Billy Bob Thornton. And as we hear in this clip, becomes influenced by his philosophies.
Your problem is you spent your whole life thinking there are rules. There aren't. We used to be guerrillas. All we had is what we could take and defend. Truth is, you're more of a man today than you were yesterday.
How do you figure?
It's a red tide, Lester, this life of ours. The shit they make us eat. Day after day, the boss, the wife, etc., wearing us down. If you don't stand up to it, let them know you're still an ape. Deep down where it counts, you're just going to get washed away.
Season 2, then, was a prequel to the events of Season 1. A young couple, Peggy, played by Kirsten Dunst, and Ed, played by Jesse Plemons, are left to cover up a hit-and-run accident, little knowing that the victim has strong gangland roots. Ed has ground down the body of the victim in his butcher shop, and so they have to re-crash their car.
You sure about this plan?
It'll work. Like I said, my uncle used to drive his truck in Drinkle, Milwaukee, and you know, insurance don't want to pay for accidents when you're drunk, so he came up with this plan. Every crack up, he'd drive his truck to some deserted spot till he sobered up, fake a new accident to cover the damage he did drinking.
Well, it's creative.
So that's what we do. We cover the damage, file a report, and then, I mean, that should do it. We got rid of the guy's all grown up and you burned his clothes, you said, so once the car's fixed, we're free.
And so on to Season 3, where the action revolves around brothers Ray and Emmett Sussey, both played by Ewan McGregor. It ends up with Emmett killing his brother Ray. And here he confesses his crime to policewoman Guria Bugle, played by Carrie Coon.
I killed him.
Your dad?
Ray. First I tricked him. Then I killed him. Like no days had passed, like one thing goes and then another, like you whack a tennis ball back and forth.
Killed him where?
In the den of his shithole apartment. Framed picture, puzzle on the wall, like some six-year-old so proud he had to hang it up. Christmas Eve. You think there's a special level of hell for people that kill their loved ones on Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve, not the day to be at that for sure. A special level of hell. Emmett Sussey there, played by Ewan McGregor. Yet another hell reference there in season 3 of Fargo. And that my little potted history, if you like, of Fargo film and seasons 1, 2 and 3. And here we are now in season 4. Began on Tuesday on T.G. Cahir. John McGuire and Arlene Hunt have been watching. How present, in fact, it's quite suitable to do that little potted history because that's how season 4 starts with a big potted history. But we'll come back to that. How present is the devil and his works in season 4, Arlene Hunt?
There's definitely a supernatural element to season 4. There's always been a sort of slightly fey feeling around the Fargos, but there's definitely more of a supernatural element to season 4, and it's set in a different time as well. It's set in sort of November 1950s, so you're going way back ahead of all the Fargos that went before it. So it's a different time. You have different technology, you have different way of looking at things, different views of people. The tensions are very different. But there's a really creepy element all the way through. And there's a couple of scenes in it that will actually make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. I don't want to give anything away because it's just starting out. But
yeah,
it's quite creepy in places.
Yeah. And John McGuire mentioned that season four, episode one of season four, to set up what's going to be told in the 1950s, gives us a potted history of Chicago gangland.
Well, that's right. The focus that I am at a disadvantage here, I think, Sean, in that I've only watched one episode of season 4. I am going to follow it with T.G. Cahir. So, Arlene, don't spoil it for me. What we have is the timeline having shifted back to the 1950s, but the location has moved 600 miles south of Fargo, North Dakota, to Kansas City, Missouri. And we start in the 1920s in a kind of where the Scandinavian immigrant population of North Dakota, all the Gundersons and Salversons of the previous seasons and the original film, has changed to the melting pot minority immigrant communities in the city, like the Irish and the Italians, the Jewish and the African Americans. And that's what in the first episode, we get that, like you did, a potted history of their mafias and their criminal syndicates and their criminal organizations and how they intersect through this very interesting device where a child from one of these criminal families, a boy child from one of these criminal families, is swapped with the other family, which I think is a kind of an ancient Irish Celtic kind of tradition that they would have done back. Well, you know, it sounds like it, even if it isn't. This is very Coen brothers. Even if it isn't, it kind of sounds like it could be.
Yeah, Arlene, and what would
that device is used to?
Yeah, Arlene was going to come in on that. Arlene,
I was just going to say it's the ward system where a family takes on a ward, and by taking on the ward, you sort of you raise the ward in your own family, and that sort of bestows peace upon the various different families or chieftains, as it was. And it was very popular. It was very popular in Irish history and Welsh history and early Celtic history, I think.
Yeah, it has a real mythological feel to it. It certainly gives that feeling to episode one. Let's have a listen to a clip, actually, from that early sequence, because our narrator through the historical, or the telling of the history, is a 16-year-old girl called Ethelrilda Pearl Smutney. And let's have a listen to her in her narrative mode or narrator mode.
And here's what you need to know about the people in that room. None of them were white. They were Dagos, Negroes, mixed, all fighting for the right to have been created equal. But equal to what? And who gets to decide? And that leads me to this conclusory idea, dear reader, which is that history is made up of the actions of individuals. And yet, none of us can know at the time we act that we are making history.
And that's the character of Ethelrilda Pearl Smutney, played by Emery Crutchfield in season 4 of Fargo. I said Chicago, I think. It's Kansas City, of course, is where we're brought up. It's because of the gangsters, I automatically thought Chicago, but it's Kansas City, quite definitely, that we're in for season 4. And John Maguire, this, if you Ethelrilda's family, it kind of picks up on what has been there as the whole Fargo motif, if you like. This idea of the innocent person, in this case, an entirely, it would seem, innocent family who got caught up in badness.
That's the common thread between these seasons, and it's that Coen brothers sensibility, the notion, like you say, Sean, that ordinary people can find themselves surrounded by violent and corrupting forces and must struggle and often fail to avoid getting caught up in it. And over the three seasons, which to me range from very, very good to outstanding, the mostly disconnected stories of Fargo's have been unified by that simple battle between good and evil. The good in our case now is going to be Ethelrida, I think. She's this mixed-race 16-year-old high school student maths prodigy who, by the end of the first episode, finds herself already swept up in the latest chapter of the dark history of Kansas City. Kansas City being, of course, like you confused it with Chicago, but it does have this long tradition in film noir of being a place of corruption and gangsterism and crime. And it's a very, very rich, what Hawley has put together here is a very, very rich. It's actually hard to know where to start with his depiction of the world that he's brought us to in the 1950s. It's beautifully photographed.
Yeah, let me ask Arlene a little bit about the nature of that, the type of 1950s Kansas that we're given. It did really strike me. It's a very gangsterish type of place.
Yeah, there's a whiff of noir about it. It's very this between the outfits and the styles and the cars that everybody drives and the buildings, and the cinematography on it is amazing. It's really, really well done. So you from the off, you get the sense that, you know, this is a time and a place, and you really feel that in this. This is the time. This is the place, and anything is on the table here. You know, you've got two warring families going against each other. You've got corrupt cops. You've got everyone driving these old Packards and things like that. It's just the minute you watch it, you're just thankfully removed from your day-to-day existence.
And how surprising is it, Arlene, the casting of Chris Rock? We all know him as a stand-up comedian, essentially. And here he is playing the character of Loy Cannon, who's at the very heart of this gangster movement.
I actually thought he was really good in this, because he's playing Chris Rock. Always to me is like various gears of Chris Rock, and when Chris Rock is in high gear, he's fast talking, fast thinking, fast everything. Here he's really, really buttoned down, and he has these amazing moments where he says absolutely nothing at all, but you can see the cogs whirring behind his eyes. You know, you can see, because he has to be like that, because he's a black man in Kansas, in Missouri, in the 1950s. He's already despised by so many people there, and he's going to go to war against a Sardinian, basically an old school Sardinian mob. And it's, if you're going to be that man, he's also a family man. So if you're going to be that, that spike, that something that leads men and leads them into danger, you have to have everything buttoned down. You have to know what the next step is going to be. And he portrays that brilliantly, because you don't know what he's thinking. He doesn't doesn't talk much about what he's going to do next. He doesn't tell you what his next move is going to be. So it's really interesting to, especially as the series progresses, and it's really interesting to watch the development of that particular character.
And I must say, also his hairstyle, I don't know if that changes as the episode goes on, but there's something very frightening about there's a bit of it sitting up at the front, and you think he's either totally insane and would turn on you and kill you in a flash, or he just has a crazy hairstyle, and I'm waiting to find out. But John, Hawley, the Noah Hawley, the writer, director and creator of the whole brainchild of the whole television series, which was quite a task to take on from the success of the film, if you like.
Yeah.
He's always had interesting actors. I mean, we heard from Billy Bob Thornton in the midst of our potted history. David Thewlis is there in previous seasons as well. And he continues with interesting actors in this season, season 4.
He does. And the first episode of it is so packed with characters and information. It often feels like we're zooming past important elements in the story, things that will be picked up later. It's very dense. And in order to put that across, you need the kind of A-list casting that he has. Chris Rock, Jesse Buckley plays a character I can't wait to see more of.
Yeah.
She's this kind of Munchausen's nurse who gets involved with Jason Schwartzman, who's one of the Fada family, the Sardinian gangsters. She gets involved with him. She has a very peculiar way of talking and an addiction to cocaine. And she's immediately a brilliant character. And alongside them, you have Jason Schwartzman, like I said. But in particular, it's Crutchfield, playing the 16-year-old, who seems like a real find and looks like she's going to be carrying much of the storytelling burden. Essentially, Ethel Reda is telling us what it takes to make it in America, an America that's very much against them and all the other minority groups that are trying to make their living by fair means and foul in Kansas yeah. City. And she's basically asking the question, if America is a nation of immigrants, then how does one become American? And it's a question posed by most of the characters
yeah.
at one point or another.
Let's listen to another clip then from season four. And this features Jessie Buckley as the nurse. She's meeting or making the acquaintance of Jason Schwartzman, Justo Fada, the son of the crime boss. And the crime boss himself is dangerously ill in St. Bartholomew's Hospital. And here is the chat between son of crime boss and nurse.
Oh, excuse me. Young fella, chuck wagon
sorry.
Coming through. Oh, God, don't need you for sorry. What were you worrying and grieving?
Hey, you got any Bennies, Zoomers, a little chicken powder? You know, something to pick me up. I've had a world-class day.
Well, sir, those types of narcotics, when prescribed as a medical remedy, say as a mood elevator to strengthen the concentration, can be quite effective, but ingesting them without the written prescription of a certified physician, that's not something I can help you with.
What if I share?
Holy Christmas. Hmm?
And using illicit substances, it's very important to avoid obvious physical tells. Redness of the eyes, inflamed epidermal tissue, say around the proboscis.
You got a funny way of talking.
Yeah. I'm from Minnesota, land of 10,000 lakes.
No, I mean, you use big words.
Well, I have found in my 36 years in God's green earth that it's absolutely critical to be precise in your use of language so as to avoid instances of misreckoning. Well, hi, I should return to my ministrations.
You have a Bunsen burner?
Huh? No.
Bunsen burners light cigarette. Jason Schwartzman and Jessie Buckley there in a scene from season four of Fargo. Arlene Hunt, her performance, Jessie Buckley's performance, I don't know if she can do anything wrong from anything I've seen her in recent times. Her performance is extraordinary in this.
She is magnificent in this. She's possibly my favourite character in this series. She is, just put aside anything you expect her to do, because she's going to surprise you in every single episode she's in. She's just amazing in this. She's got a funny way of moving, a funny way of talking. She's got this amazing wig. You know, everything about her just looks just off the charts, and you just get the sensation about it that you just don't know what she's going to do next. And that's exactly what she is. She's a pinball just ping 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 all the way in the series. She's so much fun to watch. And she the fact that you know, the Fado, the son gets involved with her, is as in all the Fargos, you can sort of see the road of destruction ahead. The moment these two characters collide, it's like, oh my god.
All right, listen, You've seen all of it, or most of it, I think, Nardine. You want us to watch it, John. Like me, can you wait to get past episode one?
No, I know it's repeated on Friday night on TG Cahir, and it's on the TG Cahir player, and on next Tuesday night at 10:30 on TG Cahir, and I'll be there for that. Yeah, I can't wait.
I'll be there with you for sure. That's Arlene Hunt and John McGuire there speaking to us about Fargo. First season, it repeated tomorrow, Friday night, TG Cahir. Season continues on Tuesday nights at 10:30 p.m. And as John told us, it's currently available on the TG Cahir player.